Parshas Vayeshev starts with Avram's, with Yaakov Avinu's loving Yosef, his special care and special devotion that he had to his son Yosef, more than all the other brothers, and everything that came out from that. The pasuk says that the Yisrael ohav es Yosef mikol banav, and Yaakov loved Yosef more than all his sons, kiven zakunim uloi. Because he was the Ben Zakunim, he was born when he was old. He was born when he was, when Yaakov was much older. Rashi brings here also, that he was like a chacham with him. What does that mean? Everything that he learned from Shem Ve'ever, everything that he learned in the Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'ever, which Yaakov learned in when he ran away from Esav, Masar Loi, he gave over to Yosef. This needs a little explanation. First of all, Yaakov was doing a lot of learning before he ran away to the Beis Medrash Hashem Ve'ever. In one of the, we're familiar with the famous, with Rashi, who says that he was Yoshev Ayholim, that he sat in tents, that he sat in the tent of Shem and the tent of Ever. But Chazal also say Yoshev Ayholim, that he sat in the tent of Avram and the tent of Yitzchak. We know that Yaakov knew Avram, even though we don't find any discussions between them in the Torah. Yaakov learned by Avram, and Yaakov learned by Yitzchak. And he must have learned a lot of Torah from Yitzchak. He was in his 60s when he ran away. And it doesn't say that he gave Yosef that Torah. Just the 14 years that he learned in the Beis Medrash of Ever, was the Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'ever, but Shem wasn't alive anymore. The 14 years that he learned by Ever, that Torah he gave over to Yosef. So one would imagine that he probably taught all his children the Torah that he learned from his fathers. It was the Yerusha of all of them. And probably that's what he taught Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehud. He probably taught that to all his children. And to Yosef specifically, he taught the Torah that he learned from Shem Ve'ever. Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'ever. So we have to understand what's special about the Torah. What Masechta were they learning in Shem Ve'ever that was unique to Yosef HaTzadik? What was the sugya over there by Shem Ve'ever that was unique that Yosef HaTzadik should learn? Yeah, but that's Egla Rufa were the Agolis of the Mishkan, but what was the Pnimius of it? What was the Inyan? I'm not going to say it now, but if you want afterwards, everything that I'm going to say does connect to the Agolis and the Egla Rufa, but I'm not going to do that today. So we first heard about this, not really first, but the place that we learned about Yaakov's special learning by Shem Ve'ever is in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze. Vayetze Yaakov mi Beersheva vayelech Haran. Yaakov went out of Beersheva and he went to Haran. And it says that he came upon the place where the Beis HaMikdash will be. And he slept there. Vayishkav b'mokeh mahu, and he slept there. And Rashi says, where do you think he slept? Should have just said Vayishkav. He reached that place and he slept. What do you have to say? Vayishkav b'mokeh mahu, and he slept there. So Rashi says it's a miyut. He slept there. There he slept. But for 14 years before, he didn't sleep. 14 years that he learned by Shem Ve'ever, he didn't sleep. Now if this means that he literally didn't sleep, or he didn't sleep in a bed, or he didn't sleep for a long time, everyone can explain it however they understand it. But the idea is that there was an Indian, there was an idea here in this learning that it was the type of learning of no sleeping. So we have to understand, when Chazal tell us that he didn't sleep, this is not some way of advertising what a masmid Yaakov Avinu was. When I heard this question for the first time, the phrase that I heard it was, Mistama ven art givena Yoshev Ayholim hat er ganz gut gelernt. Mistama, when he was a Yoshev Ayholim, when he learned before he escaped from Esav, Mistama, probably he learned very good then also. He probably didn't sleep much then either. He was probably learning with tremendous hasmada then. But Chazal want to tell us that the learning by Shem Ve'ever was a no-sleep learning. What's a no-sleep learning? That's first of all. And secondly, it's interesting that although it's hinted in a few places in the Torah that he spent 14 years, 14 years is a big chunk of a person's life. He spent 14 years learning in that Beis Medrash. It's not mentioned anywhere in the Torah. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. Yaakov went out of Be'er Sheva. Vayelech Haran, and he went to Haran. And I always tell the Bacham when I learn this pasuk with them, there's 14 years between the beginning of the pasuk and the end of the pasuk. It's the longest pasuk in the Torah. Vayetze Yaakov Mibeersheva happened 14 years before Vayelech Harana. It was a gap of 14 years that he learned by Shem Vever. If it's so important, why doesn't the Torah tell us about it? It almost seems to be trying to hide it. When we want to say that it appears that Hashem is not watching us, if that's the way it appears, we say that Hashem is sleeping. Like David HaMelech asks Hashem, Lama Tishan, why are you sleeping? Eliyahu Bahara Carmel told the priests of the Avodah Zarah, maybe your God is sleeping. Sleeping means that while he's there, but he's not there. He's elsewhere. He's in Shemayim. Yaakov Avinu, when he was leaving Eretz Yisrael and going into Galus, a tremendous change was happening in his life. He was leaving that closeness to his fathers, that living in Eretz Yisrael in a holy land. He was leaving that place of Giloy Kavod Shemayim, where everything is on the surface, with his nevuah and so on and so forth, where everything is clear. And he was going to a world of nisyonos, of difficulties, of trials and tribulations, where Hashem's presence is not always clear. He left Beersheva and he went to Haran. On his way, he was attacked and robbed. Again, tremendous nisyonos. He came to Lavan. He tricked him, married the wrong woman. He worked for many, many years. Lavan tried to trick him 100 times. Back and forth, trying to trick him, and then he had to run away. He had to escape in the middle of the night, and Lavan wanted to chase him, and as the Haggadah tells us, Lavan wanted to kill them all out. Lavan bikesh lakar es hako. Lavan wanted to kill them out. Then we had in last week's parasha, he wanted to meet Esav. Esav ran after him with 400 men. Yaakov was literally afraid that Klal Yisrael would be decimated. He split them up into two camps, so that if one is killed, the other one can try to run away. Not easy times. He was going into a life that was, until now, he basked in the Beis Medrash, Yoshev Ayhalim, the closeness to his fathers, the closeness to his Messiah, and now he was going out to a world that's cold and dark. And he needed to learn for 14 years to ingrain in himself and to understand on the deepest levels, much deeper than we can understand. We can understand the what, but we can't understand the real essence of what he was learning. That it may seem like Hashem is sleeping, like David says, Lama Tishan, why are you sleeping? It may seem like, sometimes it seems like Hashem is sleeping. We don't see Hashem. We don't feel Hashem's involvement. But Hine Layonum V'Layishan, Shomer Yisrael, Hashem never sleeps. Layonum, he doesn't doze, V'Layishan, and he doesn't sleep, Shomer Yisrael, the watcher of Klal Yisrael. Hashem doesn't sleep. And this was his limud for 14 years, and in order to ingrain that and to represent that, it says that for 14 years he didn't sleep. Because he wanted to show himself this idea that there's such a thing as no sleep. And that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yonam v'loyishan shayim Yisrael. Hashem is never sleeping. And that's why it doesn't say it beferish in the pasuk. That's why it's not explicit in the pasuk that he went for 14 years, because the whole idea of that 14-year limud was that things are not always as they appear. There are things going on beneath the surface. On the surface, Lama Tishan, why are you sleeping? But under the surface, like the same David HaMelech said, Lo Yonum V'lo Yishan Shem Yisrael, Hashem is not sleeping. What goes on above the surface, what we see in the world, what appears to be happening, is like the iceberg, and most of it is under the water, and a little bit of it is sticking up out of the water. We just see the very tip. We just see a little bit of it. But the truth is, what's going on under the surface is much bigger and much more than we can understand. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is watching and motivating and pulling strings and making things happen and making one event lead to the second and affecting history and people's personal lives and the life of Klal Yisrael and the existence of the whole world. La'yanum v'la'yishan shayma Yisrael. That was Yaakov Avinu's Seder. That was his Sugya. That was his Masechta. That he was learning when he was going out to Golos. There's no greater raya than the brothers of Yosef themselves. Yosef comes to them and says, I had a dream that I'm going to be the king. So the brothers are like, no, we can't have that. We have to prevent that from happening. Let's sell him to Egypt. Right, you just helped him become the king. the brothers trying to prevent the dream from happening, they're the ones that made the dream come true. It may look like, on the surface, things are very different than what they are under the surface. On the surface, the brothers were sending Yosef to the far corners of the world. He'll never show his face again. And under the surface, they themselves were arranging it that they're all going to bow down in front of him a few years later. What's on the surface and what's under the surface are two different things. Now Yosef, like his mother Rachel, who cries for her children in Galus, like his child Menashe, who's the first one of the Aseres HaShvatim to go out into Galus, Yosef is the one who goes out into exile first. He prepares the way for Klal Yisrael. He leads the Jews in exile. Yosef is the Shevet that shows us, that teaches us, and that leads the way into how we live in exile. So he's the one that Yaakov had to hand. He's the one that Yaakov had to hand over the things that he learned by Shem Ve'Evan. Yaakov told Yosef, when I was heading out into Golos, Yaakov may not have known that this was Yosef's plan. It may have been Ruach HaKodesh, but however the Hashgacha wanted it to happen, the message over here was that when I was going out into Golos, there was a certain Seder, a certain Sugya that I had to learn. That was the Sugya of Shem Ve'Evan. Now you're going into Golos. Shortly, Yosef was sent out into Golos. You have to learn the same sugya. Kol ma shelamad mishem ve'ever masar loy. Everything he learned from Shem ve'ever, he gave over to Yosef. And that's the message that I was thinking, like, when we're children, and if you know young children, you know that this is a common thing with young children, that if there's a dark room, and there's like a robe hanging, or something piled up on a dresser, or something like that. When the lights are off and it's the middle of the night, anything can be a monster. Anything can be scary. We've all seen it and experienced it. You could have the most innocuous, innocent things, but when the lights are off, suddenly it seems sinister, it seems dangerous. In the darkness of Golos, when we don't see, it seems like Hashem is sleeping, we don't have clarity. Things seem dangerous to us, the nations of the world, our situation. Sometimes things seem very dangerous. But if we would just be able to flip the switch, turn the light on, it's just some clothes on the dresser. It's just a book. It's nothing. If you just flip the switch, you see it's really nothing. And that's what Golos is. The scariness, the frightfulness of Golos is the frightfulness for us. Because we're in the darkness, and we don't see the reality of what things are. But under the surface, everything is in the hands of Hashem. Hashem never let us out of His hand. Hashem's holding on to us every step of the way. Hashem's holding our hand every step of the way. And under the surface, there's nothing really scary, because every nation and every guy and every ummah and every threat and every sakana is being carefully orchestrated by Hashem, who wants only the best for us. Rashi says in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, he says that the parasha starts, Yaakov settled in the land of Eretz Yisrael, and these are the children of Yaakov, Yosef. These are the children of Yaakov. Yosef was 17 years old. So the obvious question is that Yaakov had many children. And obviously, this is, in the Parsha Pshat, this is just the beginning of a story about the story of Yaakov's family. But Rashi brings a medrash. It's in parentheses for some reason, in some Rashis. But it's a medrash Tanchuma, and it's a medrash Rabbah also, I think. He says it's a mashal to a pishtani, a flax merchant. And the flax merchant has camels loaded with flax, and they start coming into town, camel after camel after camel, loaded with flax. And there's this blacksmith who's saying, what am I going to do with all this flax? Where are we going to put all of it? There's just no place to put it. It takes up so much space. So he says, one chacham sold the blacksmith. It's not such a problem. One spark from your hammer, and this flax is very well taken care of. It all can melt down to nothing. One little spark from your hammer, or according to some, from his blower. But one little spark that comes out of your work, and the whole pishtun disappears instantly. So similarly, at the end of Parshas Vayishlach, it says all the lists of all the kings of Edom, of Esav. Aluf this, and aluf that, aluf this one, aluf that one. All the kings of Esav, and each one with its own threat, and its own danger, and its own power, all of them out to get Klal Yisrael. It's dangerous. And when Yaakov Avinu saw that, He told HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how are we supposed to survive all of that flax? Which I have to say as a footnote, those that were here last week, that we talked about the similarity between Cain and Esav, the Sfarim say that the flax represents the flax, which was Cain's Avoida. Because Esav was the inheritor of Cain. I found afterwards, the Shlosh says that connection. That's what the flax is. But Yaakov Avinu says, how can I handle all this flax? What am I going to do with all this flax? Where am I going to put all of it? In other words, Yaakov Avinu is scared and mystified. How is Klal Yisrael going to be able to battle and be able to come up against these huge kingdoms that are going to come forth from the Goyim? And Hashem says, all it takes is one spark. Because the Pasuk says, V'haya beis Yaakov Esh, the house of Yaakov will be a fire. U'beis Yosef Lehova, the house of Yosef will be a flame. The Esav Hakash, and Esav is the straw. And it's easily taken care of. That's the light switch turned on. In the darkness of Golos, things seem so dangerous, so threatening. But Hashem says, no, it just takes one spark. You'll see, the Geula will come, Hashem will intervene. It just takes one little spark, and you'll see that it's all nothing. It vanishes instantly. Sitting here in Golos, what's the spark? What's the spark for us? What's the light switch? The Nefesh HaChayim teaches us that every single thing that exists in the world comes ultimately from Hashem. That means that every single thing that exists in the world comes ultimately from a source of Kedusha, from a source of holiness. Everything in the world. But what happens? As it comes down into this world, Hashem hides its Kedusha. So we could have a table, this table is Kaddish, but we could have chairs, walls, we could have a car. These things, they're not holy, even though Hashem is the source of everything. But as things come down into this world, they become mundane. There's one thing that does not suffer at all from coming down into this world. That no matter what, no matter how low it has to come down, it maintains its full Kedusha as it is by Hashem Himself. And that's the Torah. The Torah talks about very mundane things. What happens if an ox gores a cow? How high do you have to build an Eruv? Very, very mundane things the Torah seems to talk about. About transactions, a chesha mishpat, a yeridea, and a man and a wife get married. How much does he owe her? How much does she owe him? What does he have to do for her? What does she... Very mundane things. It deals with this world. And even so, when we learn those things and we involve ourselves in the Torah, its kedusha, its level, its madrega, its holiness is exactly as it is in the highest worlds by Hashem Himself. So it's no wonder that the Nefesh HaChaim says that someone who involves himself in the learning of Torah has the perspective of being closer to Hashem, has the perspective of being able to see without the darkness. He's able to see as if the light is on. It's famous that the Chazon Ish calls Torah the Or HaOiris, the light of light. Torah is light because Torah is clarity. Because when we involve ourselves in Torah, we're involving ourselves in something that does not fall under the shroud of darkness that shrouds the entire rest of the world. The Nefesh HaChaim brings on the Pasuk in Eishes Chayil that we say, Gimolasu Tov V'loy Ra. She does for him good and not bad. He says, somebody who learns Torah, you know what she does for him, the Torah? That he sees everything as Tov, and not bad. He doesn't see bad. Because he recognizes Hashem in everything. The power of someone who learns Torah is that he's able to recognize, it's just flax. Hashem is not sleeping. Hashem is running the world. That clear perspective that we find that Gedolim and Tzaddikim have, that they're able to look at the world fearlessly, that they're able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in everything, that they're able to recognize Hashem in every event, that they're able to see the hand of Hashem, that's because of their involvement in a Torah that maintains full clarity. The Choshech doesn't descend on the Torah. Torah Or. The Choshech doesn't descend on the Torah. Which brings us to the Nes of Chanukah. The Greeks are called Choshech in the Torah. The Ha'aretz Ha'isosayu V'vayu V'Choshech Zu Yavan. Darkness, that's Greece. And we have already been Messiah, it's been taught to us generation after generation that the threat of Greece was a threat of culture and of wisdom. And that's why it was such a threat to the Jews, who are also a people of wisdom. Because what Yavan wanted us to believe, and what they wanted, what they've succeeded in fooling the world into believing, is the exact opposite of what Yaakov Avinu learned by Shem Ve'Aver. That it's not that there's something beneath the surface, but that what you see is what you get. Whatever's provable, whatever the world of science, whatever this world can demonstrate, that's what exists. Whatever's not provable, whatever's in the realm of the spiritual, whatever is going on beneath the surface, that you say beneath the surface things are happening, no, if we can't prove it, if I don't see it in this world, it doesn't exist. Many times, even if I could see it in this world, it doesn't exist. Yavan is darkness. If the darkness of this world is that we don't see the hand of Hashem, so Yavan is the dark of the darkness. Because Yavan wants to tell us there is no hand of Hashem. All events that happen, they're natural events. Yavan worships the Teva, nature, the sciences. Everyone's the same. There's no special Am HaNivcher. There's no special Klal Yisrael. There's no spirituality. There's no Ruchnias. There's no Olam Haba. There's no life after death. It's all Teva. It's all this world. That was the threat of Yavan. And they succeeded to a very large extent because many, many, many Jews fell prey to the lure of Yavan, and that's what we have in the Siavnim, that we have Yidden that fell. A Yidden that started to believe that this world is what's important. There are all kinds of stories in the Midrashim of Yidden that started slowly but surely to dress like Goyim, to act like Goyim, to eat like Goyim. And slowly but surely they started to forget that there's a world of Pnimius. There's an internal world. There's a spiritual world. There's a world beyond what we see, beyond what's in front of us. In one of the great and sad ironies of the world, in the world at large, except for by Ephraim Yidden, the victory of Hanukkah is looked at as the victory as some kind of elite fighting commando force that managed to, in the spirit of the Six-Day War or the victory at Entebbe, that managed to beat the odds, and through their wisdom and their prowess at military maneuvers, they managed to beat all the Yavanim. But that's a mistake in history. It's a historic mistake. Because if you know the history, the people that fought the wars never went to school to be generals. They weren't generals. They were Talmidei Chachamim. Like the famous story, and I'm sure I've mentioned it before, the famous story that they say that that many years ago, I think it was in the time of the Chafetz Chaim, the Maskilim made a play to make fun of Ephraim Yidden. They put on a play to make fun of Ephraim Yidden. And the play was that they had a demonstration of what happens when Jews go to war. The Pesukim describe, the Torah describes what happens when Jews go to war. So they did that demonstration. They put up a whole army of people. And the Kayan gets up and he says, who just got married this year should go home. And a bunch of people walked off the stage. And who planted a tree this year, he should go home. And a bunch of people walked off the stage. And who built a house this year, he should go home. And a bunch of people walked off the stage. He said, whoever is afraid, Varach HaLevav, should go home. And everyone walked off the stage, except for the Chafetz Chaim, Reb Chaim Oizer, and someone else, three old Jews. That was the joke. It's funny, he says, that was the joke. They told it over to the Chafetz Chaim. I think it was the Chafetz Chaim. They told it, one of the Gedolim. And they said, yeah, but they didn't say the end of the play. The end of the story they didn't do. The end of the story is, and they won the war. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu fights our wars. It's not about military maneuvers. And the same thing is true over here. I heard a shmooze from Rav Mendelsohn of Merkaz HaTorah. I think it was 2 years ago. He said, if you want to understand the victory of Hanukkah, find a tank. It's hard to find. It's easier in Eretz Yisrael. Go to a tank, a real tank. Stand in front of a tank. Just stand in front of it. You over here, the tank over here. Look at the tank and imagine to yourself that you went to war against the tank and you won. That's the miracle of Hanukkah. It's amazing. It wasn't about an elite fighting force. It was about Gimolasu Toi V'loi Ra. It was those who are involved in Torah and are able to see beyond power, beyond might, beyond the military, they're able to see the Yad Hashem, they were the ones that were able to hold on to their Emunah, hold on to their involvement in Torah. V'zeidim b'yad oiske sayresecha, the Ovrei Aveira in the hands of those who are involved in Torah. And the whole miracle of Chanukah, of a can of the menorah burning for 8 days straight, that was the message. You think there's only nature? You think there's no spiritual world? Watch how I can take the nature and just, without any effortlessly, make it do things that you didn't think it could naturally do. And the message underneath that is that the truth is that every time we light a candle and it burns, that's a big miracle. How does that work? The oil is liquid. How does that work? It's a miracle. Why aren't we amazed when we light a candle and it burns? Because it's a miracle that we're used to. It's a miracle that we can count on. It's a miracle that happens all the time. We get used to miracles of technology. If you would have taken a cell phone, an iPod, and brought it, not so long ago, 60 years ago, shown it to somebody, they would have started worshipping it. It's miracles. A thin little thing, you can do anything, download it, be in touch with anyone, anywhere. It's a miracle. Why don't we our mouths drop open in shock every time we see such a thing? Because it's a miracle that we get used to. We're all amazed the first time we see it. It's a miracle that we get used to. I always feel like, whenever I a couple of weeks ago I flew to LA, so you get in the plane and it starts going faster and faster and faster, and then it takes off. And inevitably, I always feel like, how does this work? It's just amazing. How did that happen? And I look around and no one seems to be amazed. And I'm saying, I can't believe it. It's amazing. This metal, hunk of metal just flies into the sky. I can't get over it. But I'm not sure if everyone's just like really amazed inside or we just get totally used to it. Yeah, of course, I'm going to a piece of metal, it will fly in the sky, take me to exactly where I want to go. Sure, of course. It's amazing. But when we get used to something, and it's common, it doesn't seem amazing anymore. And that's where Yavon gets us. They say, all of this, no, it's not from Hashem. That's what's supposed to happen. It's Teva. So Hashem made that Teva change. The Ner was supposed to last for 1 day? No. It will last for 8 days. And by the way, now we have the answer, perhaps the answer truest to the spirit of Chanukah, to the famous question of why Chanukah is 8 days. Chanukah should really be 7 days, the famous question. There was enough oil for 1 day. So the miracle was only 7 days long. The answer is that would be a misunderstanding of the whole essence of Chanukah. The whole essence of Chanukah is to show me that everything that happens in this world is a miracle. That it's all in the hands of Hashem. To have Chanukah for 7 days and not for the 8 days would be missing the whole point of Chanukah. I once heard the famous Gemara about Chanukah, my Chanukah, the famous Gemara in Bama Madlikin. He said, what's Chanukah? So it says on the 25th of Kislev starts 8 days of Chanukah, that the Greeks came into the Beis HaMikdash, they made all the oil impure, and they found one jar of oil, and it lit for 8 days. The next year, it says, they established holidays for Halal and Hoidah. Halal is saying Halal, we say Halal for 8 days, and Hoidah, we say Al HaNisim, we thank Hashem for the Nes. There's something missing here. Isn't one of the main things of Chanukah that we light a menorah every day? Why? It's a funny thing. You have visited the Gemara about Chanukah. The Halal. If I was writing the Gemara with the Masakin, Hadlokas Menorah Halal Vahidah. So there are various answers. Some say that the Menorah is part of the Hoidah, but it seems to be missing. This is one of the main things of our observance of Chanukah, that we light a Menorah. I once heard that, no, the Menorah is not what we do to commemorate the Nes. The Menorah is the Nes. The fact that we have the Hadlokas Menorah, that's our experiencing the Nes. That we have in our houses every year for 8 days, we have this Nes of Chanukah, of the Menorah for 8 days. And as a showing Hashem our appreciation for that Nes, we do Halal Vahidah. So when I heard this Teretz the first time, I said, that's not a good answer. Our Menorah doesn't last for 8 days. If we would light a menorah and it would last for 8 days, we put in enough oil for 1 day, and it would light for 8 days, then I would understand that we have the Nes of the menorah in our house, and we have Halal Vahidah to commemorate that Nes. That I understand. But we don't have a nes now menorah. We have to faithfully light it every night. But after understanding this, I understand now, I missed the boat completely. The whole point of the nes of Chanukah is that we should learn that every hadlagas menorah is a nes. And it happened through the menorah, through that original nes that happened many, many, many years ago. We gained the realization that every time we light a menorah, even when it's in the realm of nature, even when nothing out of the ordinary is happening, that's a nes. So we do for 8 days to commemorate the nes that happened with the understanding that every day is a nes. And then as a simcha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did that nes of letting our menorah light for the time that it lights, we say halo vayda. How did the miracle happen to show the Yavanim that this all this facade called nature, it's really, you turn the light on. It's just because it's dark. If you would turn the light on, you would see it's all Hashem. How did that happen? It happened through a menorah. The menorah represents Torah. As the Gemara says, a reitzel lahachkim, someone who wants to become a chacham, yadrim, he should turn towards the menorah. The menorah represents chacham. It's not a coincidence. Because we said before that it's through Torah that a person is able to get that perspective and that clarity, that he can see through the darkness. Our ability to see through the darkness comes dafka through Torah. Now, it sounds like I just started a shiur about Parshas Vayeshev, and somewhere, with some precarious leap, I jumped into Chanukah. But that's not what happened. And I'm going to show you why. There's a Mishnah in Bava Kama, and it's also brought in Bava Madlikin. It says like this. Tanan Hasam, the Mishnah in Bava Kama, this is one of the few references, I think maybe, I'm not sure if it's the only or if there's one other reference to Chanukah in the Mishnayos. Geitz ha-yeitze mitachas ha-patish. A spark that comes out from under a hammer, right? The blacksmith's hammer. Spark comes out. The yotza v'hizik, and it goes out and it damages chayiv. It's the guy who's banging the hammer's job to make sure that his sparks don't damage anybody. Then it says like this. A camel that has flax on it, and it's going in Rishus HaRabim. You have a camel with flax on it, and it's going in Rishus HaRabim. And there's a candle, and somebody put a candle outside their, you know, like a street lamp. Someone put a candle outside of his house, and he burned up the flax. He has to pay. You shouldn't have put your candle outside your house. But if it's a Ner Chanukah, it says, if it's the Ner Chanukah, then you're pater. If it's a Ner Chanukah, then you don't have to worry, even though you burnt his flax. Because people who carry flax should know that for these 8 days, people are permitted to have candles outside. It's something you should have known to protect yourself from. So the Shlach HaKadosh says, it's not a coincidence that in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, Yaakov Avinu says, what am I going to do with all this flax? And Hashem says, no, there's one spark can burn up all the flax. And then we have a Gemara, a camel that has tons of flax on it. That if the Ner Chanukah burns it, pater. The Ner Chanukah, that's the spark. The Ner Chanukah, which represents the light that comes out of the clarity of learning Torah, that's the spark that's able to destroy all the Pishtan. It's the same, the Shlach HaKadosh says it. It's the same camel, it's the same flax, and the spark that came out of the hammer, that's the Ner Chanukah. Unbelievable. And the Bamish comes out exactly that time of year that we start reading about the flax in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, right, it's always right around within a few days of Chanukah. If it's not on Chanukah, it's within a few days of Chanukah. Because that's the flax, the clarity of the Ner Chanukah. The clarity, that turn on the light. Do you think you don't see Hashem? You think Hashem is sleeping? You think it's just nature? No, turn on the light. Just like the Limud by Shane Ve'ever. You think Hashem is sleeping? You think the world is just going and there's no one pulling the strings? Turn the light on. That light is the Ner Chanukah. That light is the clarity that Klal Yisrael, through their attachment to Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu broke into Teva and woke everybody up. And, no, I'm here. I'm not sleeping. A little reminder. I'm not sleeping. And every year when we light that Ner Chanukah, we remind ourselves, Hashem is not sleeping. It may be dark outside, but we're going to put by the window this little Ner, and it lights up all the darkness. That little Ner, that little spark, can destroy all the Pishtan. The Gemara says from there that we see from here that you should put the Ner Chanukah less than 10 tefachim. You see from here that you're supposed to put the Ner Chanukah lower, less than 10 tefachim l'chatchila, but many of us are unable to do it. But l'chadchila, you're supposed to put it, if possible, you're supposed to put the menorah low, like less than 40 inches off the ground. Berech. So I was thinking that there's a remez there also. The Gemara sees it from there, because if you were allowed to put the menorah very high, so then why are you getting all these camels in trouble? Put the menorah higher, let the camels walk through, and everyone will be happy. But no, you see that you're supposed to put the menorah low. So I was thinking also in the realm of remez, that there's a remez here. We know that the Gemara says that over 10 tefachim, that's already shamayim. The oretz is the ground, the earth is the ground, and like the few inches above the ground. Once you get already higher than that, you're already in shamayim. So take the Ner Chanukah and bring it onto the ground. Let it light up the darkness. As far away from Shemayim as you could put it. Let it light, it has to be off the ground. But let it go into this world. And that's why we have Chanukah in the weekday. Into our Yemay Sachar. There's no Isra Malacha on Chanukah. They didn't make it a day that transports us into another world. When we have Yantif or Shabbos that we don't do Malacha, we're transported into another world. Not Chanukah. Chanukah, we don't get transported into another world. Chanukah lights up the darkness. Our regular life, that maybe we don't see the hand of Hashem in our regular life, we go to work, we do our regular thing, we wear our weekday clothing, we do our regular life, and the Ner of Chanukah lights it all up and shows us, no, Hashem is here. Put it, don't have it up in Shemayim. Let it light up our world. And the Shem Yishmol says it, it's so beautiful, Kamat brought the tears when I saw it. He says another remez. Kamat every halach in Hilchas Chanukah, by the way, has remazim like this. It's unbelievable if you read through the Sfarim. He says, the Chazal tells us, also in Bama Madlikin, that wicks and oils that Chazal said you cannot use on Shabbos, you can use on Chanukah. So he says, the wick and the oil represents the person. And the flame represents the spirituality of the person. The guf of the person, the flame is the spirituality of the person. So he says, even people that they can't get ignited from Shabbos, that you can't use on Shabbos, they can't. Shabbos is a different world. It's hard for them to access that world. They don't get it doesn't reach them. Madlikin bohem b'chanukah. They can get ignited from the aura of Chanukah. The light of Chanukah comes into the weekday, into our regular life, and tells us HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in control. It's Hashem running the world. All of this only happens through an attachment to learning Torah. One of this, also we were talking about that irony of how the world looks at the victory of Chanukah and what the reality of the victory of Chanukah is. Chanukah is not a victory of strength. Chanukah is not a victory of marching soldiers. That's not the victory of Chanukah. Chanukah is a victory that through all the years, through all the trials and tribulations, through every gullus, through every threat, through every difficulty, the Yid was able to hold on to his Gemara and keep that clarity. And no matter what anybody said, and no matter how hard they tried to make us forget it, we're able to hold on to our Torah, learn from it, and keep that clarity. That's what the Nes of Chanukah is all about. Chassam Sofer used to be very makbid that there should be more learning Torah on Chanukah. Chanukah is a yontif of Torah. It's a yontif demonstrating the power of Torah to light up the darkness. We have a few yontifim of Chanukah, of Torah. We have Shavuos, we have some Chas Torah, but the specific role that Chanukah plays is that it shows the power of Torah to light up the darkness, to show us the way, to give us clarity, to help us to be fearless in the light of fearful things. And that's what we have to learn. There's no such a thing as a life without Torah. There's no such a thing as being able to maneuver, all the maneuvering, to be able to realize that it's just a robe, it's just some clothes on the dresser. There's no way to do that without the light of Torah. And that's something that we have to remember, no matter where we are in life, and no matter what different circumstances bring about, if we don't have an adherence and a firm grasp on some type of Limud HaTorah, some type of learning Torah, we're going to start getting scared of the dark. We're going to be scared of our own shadow. Torah is that or, and that's the message of Hanukkah. Torah is that or, that spark that Yaakov Avinu, that Hashem calmed Yaakov Avinu down about, that Torah Shein Ve'Ever, that Yaakov Avinu taught Yosef HaTzadik, that lights up the darkness.